we're talking about comic books today. And you asked me earlier which, what my top three or something?
Top three, regular, I'm not talking about like weird one-off stuff or okay. small miniseries by independent things and anything like that. You know, no off-the-wall Alan Moore stuff or Will Eisner or anything, but like just three superhero series or series about teams of superheroes. Okay. Marvel, DC, Image, stuff like that.
Okay, I would say the X-Men Volume 2, which was just started in 91 and had by Chris Claremont and Jim Lee, and then became Fabian Nicieza and Andy Kubert. That was a pretty good series, though it, by and large, was very connected to the Uncanny X-Men in that sense. But between those two books, it kept most of the main X storylines going, and that was the main... So I liked X-Men because it had good art... consistently good art and consistently good stories about interesting characters. It was versatile enough. It was always the one I look forward to almost the most every week, every month, because they came out monthly.
Right. Just like a period.
Yeah, exactly. I liked Batman for a while. I got into it right around the whole backbreaking thing, and so I would follow it through and past that. And some of the more dark, in-his-head detective-y stories, there was a couple good ones there.
Let me just interject here because I'm hoping you're not going to bring this up, so I'll just mention it now. What do you think about Superman?
I was looking through what comics I did have, and I have the Death of Superman comic book.
Yeah, always a crowd pleaser.
The black wrapped one.
Right. Yeah.
It's also the Death of Superman.
Yeah.
You know, I think I like Superman as a cartoon character. I like Superman in movies. But I don't see it consistently being like... I think it's the whole reason that most people that don't like Superman is probably why I wouldn't like it as a comic book. Because the scale, the scope, it's like, well, what's going on? How can he keep being challenged by a guy who builds toys, you know, and squirts him with some kind of gum that then takes him a little bit of strength to break?
Yeah.
So I'm not a big fan of Superman comics. And I mean, that said, if a good writer and there was some good artists doing it and they could kind of put together an awesome kind of... It would have to be a super epic story. So that's what they did in the DC animation. They had Apocalypse, and they had the whole Jack Kirby Fourth Gods or whatever it's called.
Yeah,
world.
Yeah.
And when that stuff would happen, you'd know like the stakes were raised and it was a real deal. Because when Superman and Apocalypse would fight, as much as they could get away with it, they would show some damage on Superman. He'd be a little bloody after fighting him.
I just don't... I think there's something innately wrong with creating, in all reality, somebody who can't be killed as a main character. Because the whole idea, I think, like, it's completely, like, antithetical to the American hero thing, which is... You want somebody who you can relate to as a person.
Yeah.
In most cases, I know there's cases where somebody wants some sort of voyeuristic thing where you can feel like you're put in the shoes of someone who can't be lose. And there's like, it's almost like kind of a happy-go-lucky, carefree aspect of the idea that, you know what, no matter what happens at the end of this, Superman's going to be alive. You know, I'm cool. But the idea, the hero idea that like, you know, you take somebody who's a normal guy who has flaws, who can be killed, and he beats insurmountable odds. He rises above the odds to win. And Superman is not that character.
That
and he looks really gay with the. I can't stand the uniform. So those things. I you know, something about Superman is just I'll never watch. I watched. You know, I've seen all the movies. I've read a great deal of the comics. I've read the ones. I've read all the big DC series where they. They reset their things. Like, what was that one with the Crisis on Infinite Earths and stuff like that? Have you read those?
A little bit of it.
Yeah, you know, they're interesting, and you know, Superman always plays a big part in all that stuff. There's this other one that is like an End Times type one that was pretty interesting that Superman was involved with. But
there's Kingdom Come.
That's the one. Yeah, Kingdom Come. Yeah, and otherwise, it's like, you know, I watched. The Adventures of Lois and Clark and stuff like that, because it was on, and I've seen a few episodes of Smallville here and there, nothing enough to keep my interest, and it's just like, that is the most boring superhero I could possibly imagine.
You're right, and then I'm going to add the caveat
Go for it.
What I said about, well, if you raise the stakes sufficient, then it doesn't matter. Superman is indestructible to normal gang members shooting guns at him. Yes. Yes, you're right. you give him a supervillain like guy that runs a whole city. That you know, I was watching Justice League Unlimited recently, and I forgot the line that Lex Luthor gives to the Question. Did you ever watch any of those?
I saw a couple of them.
You'd get a kick out of the Unlimited stuff.
It was only on for like two seasons or something.
Yeah, it was pretty quick, but it was back in Toonami, so like they'd show him at 10 o'clock, and he's like, you know how much power I would have to give up to become president of the And I'm like, that is great. And it's Clancy Brown doing the Luthor. So that's why I'm saying that like that cartoon Superman can work for me, because when they put it in Apocalypse, then they've got Inner Gang, which is all the gang guys, the criminal guys in Metropolis, get weapons from that are alien weapons. They can do some damage to Superman. Plus, Tim and Dini and all those guys decided when they were working it out that they were not going to make him the kind of guy that could just, you know, push a son out of the way stuff. He's not this ridiculous Superman that I get with. I think that's where it was coming from. Is it sort of a he was sort of a patriotic guy, you know, and the whole duality you're talking about there with we want to be able to identify with someone, but we also want to voyeuristically be able to back the someone that is going to be the strongest,
right,
and the mightiest,
right,
against insurmountable odds. I think sometimes it's insurmountable odds, and sometimes people just want like to know, have that confidence because they're that insecure. But the thing about Superman is that he's like got the whole alienation factor, being that he is quite literally an alien and maybe the last one of his kind. And alienation, I think, is how people will relate to him, because everyone feels that alienated, like I'm the only one and I'm lost in the world. A great point for me is in the first Superman movie, when he's had his first day at the Daily Planet as Clark Kent, getting pushed around and whatever has happened, and he goes to go into one of the elevators to leave the building. He's like going down, and it's a wide shot, and there's just this guy. He sticks his hand out and he points up and he goes like, "No, going up." And it's just like this, like, yeah, you know what, I would have that same kind of shit to deal with if I was some bumpkin coming into a city. And it's like,
right,
there's that whole like, you're alienated, you're just sort of, you're getting treated like shit. And that, I felt like I could really relate to the Clark Kent character that Christopher Reeves played.
There. Right, but there's...
And then I could get a real kick out of the fact that then he could be Superman.
Yeah, but there's still the thing, though, that, like, you know, there's always this, like, 21 Jump Street thing going on where as much as some guy is a loser in his pretended state, he's in actuality a badass who can kill you, you know, and that's what it comes down to. And so, like, there's always going to be some sort of swagger behind him. And the thing about Clark Kent is, for instance, in the new movie, that, you know, they did a thing where he's constantly having to still though pretend like he doesn't have anything going on. I'm a nerd. He's obviously not a nerd. The guy's a supermodel, you know. I'm a bumbling guy. Listen, this and this. I stumble around a lot. You know, that's one thing that
they didn't get it right nearly as well.
Right, and then Christopher Reeve did very well was the bumbling thing.
You watch that first movie, and he's doing the bumbling thing, but just that scene where the guy just is an asshole to him. It's like, no, going up, and it's like, wait, yeah, he can fly.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, he doesn't need your shit, buddy.
Right, and that's. It's all there. There's something about, you said something about a few minutes ago, or a minute ago, like about the whole idea that you want to feel like you can overcome things, and I think that, like, I know I've talked about this before, but the 80s action films, early 90s action films are about a similar thing, and actually the Superman movies came up in the early 80s also during where there was
79 was, I think, the first one.
Yeah, in that whole era where it was
turn of the 80s,
still a great Cold War threat, and it was actually kind of growing toward the end of it.
And Quest for Peace, Superman 4.
Exactly. Nukes. And so there's a Superman type of movie that was very clearly kind of showing us a mirror about the whole Cold War type thing, and then there's the action movie aspect where, for instance, in Die Hard, which I know I've mentioned, there's a group of nondescript European terrorists who just want money. We figure, hey, look at this. This is the other, exactly. This is our xenophobic thing. And you have two different ways of defeating them in these two different movies. There's the guy who can't be killed.
Mm-hmm.
In all reality, can't be killed. And
Superman.
Yes. And then there's a guy who's a down in his luck guy who just kind of happens to get a little bit lucky now and then, but who's got a never say die attitude,
and he bleeds
profusely, and he overcomes, he literally overcomes the odds and happens to save the day. And I feel like the Superman thing is popular, but there's something about that I personally enjoy more about the whole catharsis of seeing this guy that I place myself in the place of in the movie, which is what you do with protagonists. I have more satisfaction seeing a guy like that overcome fantastic odds than a guy who's already created to win in any situation, getting put into some convoluted idea where it looks like he may possibly lose. Oh, don't worry. Yeah. He's okay. Everyone's going
to
be all right.
I mean, that, though, in all honesty, we both know enough about this to know that that whole "it looks like he might lose" is going to happen both times.
Oh, of course, of course. And yeah.
You are, but
realistically, realistically, if Superman was a real guy, which is a stupid thing to argue, you know, more likely that John McClane's going to die than Superman in any given situation.
But Vern, Superman is a real guy. Mighty Mouse is just a cartoon. I'm sorry, I had to do it.
Yeah.
I remember when I made that analogy when Whitney was talking about realism.
Right.
I made the whole point about, you know, it's like.
And there were crickets in the room.
No, Donald Forrest got it.
He's yeah.
That's because it was actually pretty smart. What would be my third? This is fortunate because I tried to organize all the comic books I have left today. I'm so pissed that I can't find some of them. Like, I literally must have lost like a whole box of them.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's terrible.
Let's see. I'm not really Spider-Man. I did collect Spider-Man for a while because I got in when the whole Carnage thing was happening, you know?
Right.
But Spider-Man was never that.
Yeah, I think Spider-Man suffered from a lot of the same stuff as Superman did in terms of like the ultra-colorful characters and bad guys that were really terribly lame. One of the great things about X-Men is that they give you a wide variety of people with powers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't like the crap where people shoot lasers out of their fists, which is what you get out of half the superheroes anywhere, which you still get a lot of in the X-Men. You also have
Havoc. Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, the thing I probably enjoy most about the X-Men thing is people who are just kind of mutated into something weird, but who have, you know, they have advanced abilities. But the whole Wolverine Sabretooth thing,
I
love. I absolutely love. If it was just Wolverine in a series, I would just probably read that.
There was.
Right. And I've read the origin ones and everything and stuff like that. And they're cool, but the idea that somebody can heal themselves, just heal faster, and that's his basic ability, even though, you know, he does also have his claws.
They go real far with it in Ultimate. I don't know. There's just, comic books have gotten so convoluted.
So what do you think about
third series? I cannot, for the life of me, come up with a good third series. It would just be something similar to a Batman.
So if it's not Marvel, you're taking out the big famous stuff like Fantastic Four and all that.
I never cared about Fantastic Four.
The Ben Grimm character, the thing is really an interesting character. And actually, I read somewhere once that somebody was like, it's the most you know, Ben Grimm is the greatest character ever created in comics. And like it was some like
that's pretty
high and mighty comic person said that, and it was like the fact that he's like he's really empathetic, and he's actually a Jewish character too. And he originally, I don't know if they still follow that at all, but he had some like Jewish storyline stuff, and he was really like a character that had a lot of internal struggles, not only the way he looked, but because people had treated him a certain way his whole life.
Yeah,
and it just as a normal person. They treated him a certain way his whole life as a normal person, not because of some freaky thing that is supposed
now,
to mean.
No, that doesn't help.
Right. But that said, I can't read that crap. I don't like Fantastic Four. It's stupid. Silver Surfer. I don't like stuff about all that garbage. That movie looks terrible, too.
My gosh.
Okay, so let's say top two.
That would be my top
two. We both have a similar top two, then.
Yeah.
There's now something that is a common occurrence in today's movie world, which is any sort of comic that has sold decently or has been critically acclaimed at some point throughout the entire history of comics now is being optioned and made. So I think, we should talk a little bit about comic book films here.
Fine.
What do you think about this current state of
comic books
being put into film?
I like it for two reasons, but then I'll be arguing devil's advocate in a weird way because the backlash is certainly on now. People hate Spider-Man 3, and I have not seen it yet, but I think I'm probably going to not like it.
It sucks.
Either.
Go see it.
That's what I've heard from everybody. I'm not going to even go see it. I'll wait.
No. You know, don't. You're one of those people. I was just going to say something, which is, I can't stand when I tell someone. I should stop telling people what I think about movies because people come up to me and go, "Man, I can't wait to go see." I can't wait to go see this, and I say, "Oh, that was awful."
Don't bother.
But to me,
hate it when people say that to you.
Yeah, right? No. Here's the thing. I ask somebody what they think of a movie, and they're like, "Dude, it was terrible." And I'm like, "Great, I'm gonna go see it tomorrow." I like watching. I'll watch anything. I will watch anything I can. I'll watch any movie you put in front of me. And so I don't like.
I always feel like there's a definite I told you show. So going into something like that, if someone's already told me it's bad, and like they're a friend.
But that's the thing. If they tell you something's bad, and you go in to see it. Won't you be pleasantly surprised if you go in with rock bottom expectations, you're going to enjoy what you watch.
Well,
I guarantee
that,
you
that happens more often than not, like with like episode one or something, and I'm like, I don't know why everybody was so hating on it.
Yeah,
I think
they
were just hating on it to hate on it. I mean, I can find ways where this makes sense in terms of the whole storyline.
Sure, but I enjoyed watching all of them, but afterwards I could understand which ones were terrible, and which ones weren't.
You can kind of do that system. So. Okay, so why I like the comic book movie thing, or I did like it at least, is you were getting a new crop of directors that were coming in that had grown up reading the comic book, so that they weren't adapting stuff that they weren't really familiar with and kind of trying to for me, the epitome of somebody adapting something they didn't really understand right was Joel Schumacher doing the Batman movies.
Yeah, he had no business.
He looked at the TV series, the campy TV series, and then looked at some of the art in the comics maybe. And thought, well, it's bigger than life. It's spectacular. And then he made it real colorful and bizarre and canted angles. And it it didn't quite play right on screen. But Sam Raimi has done a good job with the first two Spider-Mans. And Bryan Singer did a good job with the first two X-Men. I didn't care so much for the Fantastic Four, but I don't like those characters that much. But then again, at the same time, it was one of the few that was just sort of understood itself as a comic book movie and was having a little more fun with it. And I think that's the other side of it, is that we're this, age where we want everything to be dark, but we also want it to fit our nostalgia. So, Transformers is a total no-win scenario. Because
it looks incredible. I was stunned by the previews. I had no inclination that I wanted to see this thing at all before it came out. I don't like Michael Bay.
Yeah.
I like Transformers a little bit, but it actually, the clips I've seen from the trailers look completely amazing to me. So I will see it.
Yeah, it'll be a pretty big spectacle, but... I still don't know what it's going to ultimately come down to, if it'll be anything beyond that. But it's like, should it be dark, or should it be kind of playful? Or how can it have a sense of humor like the TV, the cartoon show, or like the comic book? How can you take it that seriously? It's not... You know, we're getting back to the whole concept of associating with the protagonists.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole sense that it's nerds and their comic book, you know, superheroes, rather than, you know, dudes and their, you know, John McClanes and their Clint Eastwood and their... you know, the Dirty Harrys and the Duke and stuff.
Right.
Solving problems with a gun or with their fists or with their wits. Which was, I don't know, I think the new Batman Begins kind of did a good job of that, because it was a case
they did a great
of guy
job, yeah.
being it. There wasn't as much detective stuff. And I think maybe the second one could maybe have a lot of fun with the detective stuff if it doesn't decide to go to this realm of being all psychological thriller about the Joker. Which I could certainly see.
Did you see the viral thing they did with the Joker thing? Have you seen that? Like,
no.
They put it on the site. Like, the site stays black for when you first log on, and then slowly it fades in this really incredibly creepy looking shot of Heath Ledger in Joker makeup, and like that's it. That's all it does. So
it's kind of cool. I mean,
basically, his makeup looks like he just kind of haphazardly smeared a lot of lipstick straight across his mouth.
It's supposed to look. He's supposed to be looking real haphazard, like almost like an
totally.
Crazy
it's sloppy.
Guy
yeah, it's sloppy.
Joker. He's not supposed to be as suave. I don't. I think my favorite Joker. I like the Jack Nicholson Joker, but I really like the Mark Hamill Batman.
yeah.
He was just
Mark Hamill's good in everything.
Because he was funny. Like, he was really funny a couple of times. But he was also really psychotic.
Yeah. Mark Hamill's a really. Underrated career as an entertainer, very underrated. He's done I had to bring it up to a few people that he's been the voices of this and this and this and this on things, and they're like, what?
I can almost always tell, but
yeah,
what,
no,
what are
totally,
the ones I can't tell? Because I know he did Joker. I know he did some stuff on IGPX, which was an anime
right.
show that just
yeah
came out
he
recently.
Did he's done a voice on Avatar.
He does the Fire Lord Ozu on Avatar. They haven't shown him yet. When they get to season 3, if they ever get to season 3,
right?
Bastards. Season 2 ended in December.
He provided the voices for Solomon Grundy in The Trickster and Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. He has voiced a few other characters in The Batman.
Yeah, he probably did little bits and stuff.
Codename Kids Next Door, Animaniacs, Super Robot Monkey Team, Hyper Force Go. A lot of really high-class stuff. Tom and Jerry Kids. He's been doing some anime recently, too, I read somewhere.
He did IGPX.
But yeah, you know, I was at Kmart the other day, and there was some film there, some really terrible-looking sci-fi film, and there was this guy with...
It wasn't Time Chaser, was it? Wasn't that the one he did?
It might have been, but I was looking at the cover, and there's this kind of short-looking guy with kind of short and then dyed blonde hair pushed back and then this goatee. And after I stared at it for like 20 seconds, I was like, that's Mark Hamill.
Oh, my God.
And it's not even the Guyver or anything like that.
Oh, Mark Hamill.
So anyway, you were saying that you had two reasons why you thought the
comic book movies were good.
And what about the fact, though, that they are, in some cases, giving these franchises just to hacks who have created... For instance, the Fantastic Store, Fantastic Four, first one, at least. I'm not sure who directed the second one. It was directed by this guy named Tim Story, who directed, I think, Barbershop and Taxi before he did this. And he's just a
jobber.
Yeah, right.
He's your veritable Brett Ratner.
Yeah, yeah. And
oh, yes, I'll never end up on the lot now.
It's ridiculous, man. And so you know, they do give these things. The Fantastic Four, despite the fact that it probably doesn't have the popularity it used to, is the original.
Yeah.
You know, that's the original thing, and that's a thing that is, like, revered and hallowed in a lot of people's minds. It's this, you know, original Stan Lee creation, and it's like, you know, let's give the reins of this thing to just some guy who can just make this hack job piece of crap out of it, and we'll tie it in with some McDonald's promotions and make a soundtrack. Ghost Rider, right.
Ghost Ride the Whip.
I don't know. I think that there's a problem with it. At the same time, though, there is going to be a lot of exposure to things that most people will not have read. For instance, The Watchmen, which I think is Zack Snyder is going to be doing.
That could be interesting.
There's actually one I've been wanting to mention to you for a while, which is, I don't know if you've read it, but 30 Days of Night. Have you heard of that? It was...
No, I have not.
It's a mini series of different. I think there's three or four of them now. But the original one, it's written by this guy named Steve Niles and illustrated by Ben Temple Smith. And the art is really crazy looking. It's very strangely drawn, very well painted.
Looks like it's like painted.
Yeah, basically, it's the series takes place in this town in Alaska where 1 month out of the year the sun doesn't rise, and basically vampires in the first one congregate there to just feed for 30 straight days on this town. And it's about this sheriff and his wife who the first book was just a one-off, but it's a one-shot thing that they made, very beautifully painted and stuff. And, you know, sometimes you can't even tell what's going on just because it's weird abstract painting. But that got optioned, and it's coming out in October, actually. And I'm really interested to see what they do with it, because it seems like, you know, it's a clever enough storyline, kind of idea and stuff, but there's always something that you lose when you take just a comic, because it sounds to me like this could almost just be any random vampire movie that they came up with. Because you're losing all the art out of it. You're losing all the art. Like, if you take the way it looks and how it's painted a certain way, there's almost no color in the book. There's splotches of red.
It's really monochromatic.
Black.
Like,
yeah.
Well, they can do that in film, and we've seen that with things like Sin City. We've seen that with things like 300. I think in the case of your 30 Days of Night situation, you're running into more of a graphic novel scenario. Well, that sounds like it's a horror graphic novel. That's different than a comic book movie. Comic movie is Spider-Man.
Well, this
Batman,
it's
Superman,
not. I mean,
Fantastic Four. This
it's
sounds
a, it's
more
a 30.
History of
it's
violence
a 30-page thing, though. It's literally a single comic book. It's not even a graphic novel.
Yeah.
It's a single comic
book
that they made,
like,
a
one shot.
Yeah, totally.
It's source material. Comes from the same world of, but comic books is so versatile at this point. I mean, you've got Archie, and you've got Ninja Turtles.
You get anything,
So I think if you're talking about superhero movies, which I think is what the term that people are using more often,
I'm just talking about anything made off of a comic book.
Well, I think it doesn't matter. I think it's a good thing because comic books are, for action stuff, they're generally pretty good. They have to have already brought, I mean, they're pre-storyboarded.
Yeah.
So,
which they'll still screw up and change their own
way. They'll screw up or they'll manipulate. Yeah. Sure. So, I mean, the audience is privy to the storyboards. Let's just put it that way. So then we know when they diverge from them.
By the way, the 30 Days of Night was actually a 3-issue miniseries. I incorrectly said that it was just a one-shot thing, so I apologize for that. My main problem with the whole comic book movie thing is that, for the most part, they're not that good. I think that this first Spider-Man had its good points. The second one was generally pretty entertaining. The Batman series, the original Batman film, or the Tim Burton one, was good. After, you know, even the second one, when it got into Batman Returns, felt like it was a joke. And then the Batman Begins, like Ian mentioned, is... I thought actually it was probably better than the rest of them, which I'm sure most people think. But after that, you have a bunch of stuff that's just, I don't know, like what they did to the Fantastic Four and what they're doing to the X-Men series, where they just begin to take these incredible liberties with characters and so forth. And the X-Men 3, what they do with, they kind of bastardize the whole Phoenix storyline and combine storylines and kill off characters that don't get killed off at any certain point in certain universes. They make a look like a certain universe, almost like the Ultimates type thing. And then it's just like this complete amalgamation of these various styles, various universes and comics within these storylines, and it just doesn't seem like it. I guess it would appeal to people who don't. You know, people go into these things, they have a built-in audience, which is fans of comic books. And they almost, you know, so they have a built-in audience there, but then at the same time they have, then they make these stories that are going to do nothing but infuriate the fanboys. Because they are just complete mix-ups and mash-togethers of...
That happens in the sequels. Here's what I think. I think the first one... I'll just do this through X-Men and probably through Spider-Man 2. The first one is your origin. You can't piss the fanboys off too much. They might find it a little tedious because they feel they've got the origin a million times, but the origin is got to happen. X-Men got to have to deal with the origin. How do they come together? Who are you going to tell the story through? Blah, 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 blah. You know, it's going to be kind of boring, kind of stupid, kind of play like a TV movie, which I think is what X-Men 1 felt like to me. And it's sort of the same for Spider-Man 1. I thought Spider-Man 1 was pretty good because maybe I was less familiar with the origin. Or I felt I could relate to it more because it was like a teenage boy. And then by the second one, they know that now they've got to take what they've developed and do a pretty good story. And so generally the fanboys are going to be okay with that because it's like, okay, they're finally going to use one of the good villains and they're finally going to they don't have to develop much more. They're just going to develop more into the second bit of it. By the third one, they've brought in enough new people, and they've got their high box office that they know the fanboys are going to go either way, and right. Multiple times, so they'll just do whatever, and if some of the actors have become big, I think in X-Men 3, it was like Hugh Jackman and Halle Berry are the big actors now, so we're going to tell a story, and they're going to be the main two characters, and this guy that played Cyclops nobody cares about, even though in the comic books he's like the post-facto
leader. But that's the thing, is that in X-Men 3, it just, you know, I'm not a huge enough fan of the X-Men that I don't even own any of the comics. I've read a large number of them, but it made me really angry that they would just kind of haphazardly kill off this character and haphazardly kill off this character. And I know throughout the entire series, in all the different incarnations, that a character will die, and then you realize, oh, by the way, this was Marvel Universe 912 or something like that. You know, it's something they just make up off the top of their heads.
Well, they're not quite that bad about it, but it's more like, well, they had cloned that person before that. You know, they come up with excuses within the universe more often than not to have the character not be dead.
Gosh, you know, we got this episode 1 on the background here, and it's so weird to see Natalie Portman and Keira Knightley standing next to each other back when Keira Knightley was an undercard, was the understudy, you know?
Yeah.
And now Natalie Portman is doing, well, I mean, she's still doing big stuff. It seems like Keira Knightley is the heavyweight in box office stuff now.
I guess.
All because of the Pirates of the Caribbean series. And the fantastic film Domino. Terrible. So, you know, I don't know. I feel like the fanboys are going to go because it's a built-in audience, and then when they see how crappy it is, and I don't think they'll go back a second time. I don't know because I don't know, you know.
But
I'm not
going
to pay $9
twice
to go see.
Still build it up. And, you know, it's little kid movie type stuff. You know, the parents just take all their kids in the summer to see Transformers, even though it's rated PG-13.
Sure.
It's a hard PG-13, probably.